Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show, where business owners, professionals, and entrepreneurs gather to discover playmaking ideas for success. Your host is internationally recognized speaker, facilitator, and author, Steve Klein, who sits down with fascinating playmakers who have made themselves and their company successful. Steve will introduce you to CEOs and executives who discuss their playmaking path toward success. And now, it's time to meet this show's playmaker. Here's your host, Steve Klein.
An unknown author said, "Those that are the most successful in life are those that perform a service they truly love." Welcome to Playmakers Talk Show. I'm Steve Klein. In the studio today is a guest who truly loves giving service. Today's Playmaker has grown his company by over 7,000% since 2006. With us today is a CEO that took his company from 12 employees to more than 307 offices in four states. This great playmaker is Gagan Sharma. Gagan is president and CEO at BSI Financial Services. And that's a leading provider of technology and outsourcing services to banks, private equity firms, and hedge funds in the residential mortgage sector. Gagan led an investment group to acquire the company from its former parent bank in 2006. He's transformed the company from a small lender into an innovative and growing service provider, growing BSI by over 7,000% since his acquisition. Prior to BSI, Gagan founded a global outsourcing company serving the financial services and technology industries. He raised institutional equity financing and increased its labor force to more than 1,200 people before selling it. Well, Gagan, welcome to Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you.
Well, first I want to find out what you do. So what does BSI Financial Services do?
So we provide technology and services to lenders and investors who invest in mortgages. An example of a service and a large majority of what we do is loan servicing. For people who may not be familiar with what that means, what loan servicing is everything that happens with a mortgage once the loan has actually closed. So if you think of from your own mortgage perspective, what you as an individual may think of as your bank that you're working with, who sends you a monthly billing statement, who you send your monthly payments to, who you call when you have questions, that activity is called loan servicing.
So you are handling that for the financial institution.
That's correct. So we are essentially acting as a service provider on behalf of a bank or an institutional investor that owns or makes those mortgages. You know, our clients tend to be entities that either can't or don't have the ability to do that in-house. They prefer to work with a specialist like us, and we provide those services. We also have built a suite of other technology and ancillary services to essentially support the needs of that lender, that investor who owns those mortgages.
Well, some of those services are, and correct me if this is not correct, mortgage insurance, loan due diligence, quality control. So you are overseeing the entire package. Is that correct?
That is correct. So we don't do as much on the mortgage insurance piece. We obviously confirm the accuracy of the mortgage insurance as part of the due diligence that we would do. We also have an aspect of our business that is around offering title insurance capabilities. So if a property or a loan is being sold or a loan is being refinanced, we offer those title insurance and closing services to our lender and investor clients again as well. So our goal is to be a one-stop shop for our clients, whether they are lenders who are making new mortgages or whether they're investors who are buying these mortgages.
So in reality, you're the back office.
That's exactly right.
Behind that company. So you are representing the company you're working for.
That's exactly right.
To clients.
Yeah, we think of ourselves, as we think of the mortgage industry, a variety of risks in owning and making a mortgage, right? There's clearly credit risk, there's interest rate risk, but then there is an aspect of what we call operational risk. How do you make sure that the nuts and bolts of making sure that the document is produced, it is accurate, it is sent to the right person at the right time, and it is a very high precision service and a job, if you would, that needs to be done, and we are that operational risk element.
I would think with what you do, there's a lot of minutia, there's a lot of detail work that if a firm doesn't do that all the time, they might leave some things out or forget some things. So you're crossing the T's and dotting the I's for that client.
That's exactly right. That, you know, in isolation, a lot of our individual steps that we do may be simple, but getting all of them right all of the time is the hard part.
Well, I'm going to ask you in a few moments how you became an expert in this industry, but let's talk about BSI Financial Services first. The company is actually over 30 years old. It started in 1986. So give us a thumbnail history of the company before it became BSI Financial Services.
Sure. So the history of the company is actually quite interesting. It was founded in a small town in Pennsylvania called Titusville, which is where the first oil well in North America was drilled.
Very famous.
And the founder of our company was the president of the local bank. My understanding is, you know, back in the mid-80s, he wanted to service motorcycle leases, and the bank board wouldn't let him do it.
So why motorcycle leases?
I don't know.
Seems like a niche element there.
Niche element, but that's really what his initial goal was in the bank board. So that's outside of the realm of what we typically do. And so they said, no, we won't do it. And he decided to go entrepreneurial. You know, like many other entrepreneurs, they start in a corporate role and then they go, okay, now I want to do this on my own. I'm guessing that's one of the moments that he had back in the mid-80s. So in the 80s and the early 90s, we were more in the, you know, automobile non-mortgage side of the business. In the 90s, you know, when the previous mortgage downturn happened, when the RTC and similar other federal involvement was there in the mortgage industry, is when we, BSI, got involved in the mortgage business. You know, as we came through that downturn in the market, BSI evolved into essentially a mortgage company that was owned by a bank. So it became the mortgage division of a bank. It was acquired by a certain bank in 1996. That bank sold it to First Bank Richmond, which was the parent bank of BSI when I got involved and acquired BSI from them.
You've been doing this for a while. You had a few businesses prior to this. How did you get in this business? How did you develop your expertise in servicing mortgage loans?
So where I came to this was from what I had done in my previous business. So in my previous business as well, we were acting as a service provider for banks. In that scenario, we were doing services on the origination side of the business, which is, you know, the new loan origination, helping the loan officers, helping with the processing of the loan and the closing of the loan. After I sold that business, I stepped back and I said, let's look at the market and see where the opportunity is going to be. It's the, you know, skate to where the puck is going to be kind of an analogy, if you would. And the thought process was, there were already a lot of companies who were working on the origination service provider side of it. Working on the servicing side of it, there were many, many fewer companies that were on that side of the business. And so the intuition was, let's go where there is a large opportunity, the number of competitors is few, and we can bring something unique to that marketplace. I mean, that really was the intuition. If you think about it, that's what every entrepreneur does, right? Identify an opportunity and say, I can bring something unique to the table in this scenario.
Why Dallas-Fort Worth? You mentioned something in Dallas Business Journal about this market, but tell us why Dallas-Fort Worth for BSI Financial Services?
So Dallas has become quite the hub for mortgages. You know, as I think about it, how the industry has evolved over the last 11 years, you know, we are in the center of the country, so I can get to anywhere in the country in 3 hours. We have a great airport. It sounds trivial, but it's very important. When I have clients in New York or Southern California, I can be there very quickly. The cost of doing business is very attractive. We have, you know, diverse multilingual workforce over here. The state has been very, you know, supportive of businesses in general. You know, we are a mid-sized business. There are a lot larger businesses that have clearly moved into town. And so there is just a pro-business support system, I would say, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And because of that, it has attracted a lot of talent. So a lot of people from, you know, both coasts, other parts of the country have moved into the area as well. So a combination of these factors has made Dallas quite the hub, I would say, of mortgages.
Well, apparently having the potential personnel here in Dallas-Fort Worth, being close to either coast, having great airport has helped. But how did you grow BSI by over 7,000% in the last 11 years?
You know, what we have done is the market, our market is a very dynamic market. It changes quite rapidly. At one level, it's unsettling because one says, okay, it's not like you can pick a strategy and just follow through on that strategy consistently. It changes, our market changes every 3 to 5 years. we feel that we have done well by being prepared for what that next change is going to be, putting certain bets on the table and saying, we think when the market does this, if the market zigs, we zig with it. If the market zags, we zag with it. So, you know, one of the major changes that happened clearly was in the 2007-08, you know, financial downturn, the Great Recession, as we call it.
So this is 2 or 3 years after you acquired the company.
That's right. And, you know, on day one when I acquired the company, I was employee number 12. So it was almost a startup, if I may call it that. And our initial focus was on, you know, traditional mortgages where, you know, consumers are it's more of a processing of ongoing mortgage payments. This was clearly before the recession when the downturn happened. To us, that was a major change in the market. It created a lot of turmoil in the industry. A lot of companies went out of business. But the analogy I use is it was probably a once in a three generation forest fire that burnt a lot of tall, big trees. And it gave sunlight to a little sapling like us. And, you know, we made the best of that opportunity. We said, look, there are clearly, you know, because of the recession, there's going to be a lot of non-performing mortgages. There is a need for somebody to help investors who are going to buy these mortgages, who are going to work with borrowers, who are going to try to do things like modifications on their mortgages, things that we as society have talked about over a period of time. We said there is a lot of opportunity and there is a need for someone to do that well and do it with a degree of accuracy that I talked about earlier. And so we essentially started what we call pivoted towards the non-performing special servicing, as we call in our industry, side of the business. We invested in tools, we hired people, we started marketing to those clients. And really, we did well by listening to what the clients were doing and then stepping back and saying, how can we meet the needs of the market? You know, trying to be right at or slightly ahead of what the market is going to need so that we can meet the needs of those clients. We read the market, we invested, you know, proactively for what the market we thought was going to do, and we spread out our bets and ultimately got those clients on board. So a vast majority of the growth, and that's something that I'm particularly proud of, is a vast majority of that 7,000% growth has come organically by us going out there, developing a solution, selling it to clients and saying, hey, this is what we have to bring to the table and we'd love to help you out. And a lot of clients have given us the opportunity to serve them.
No matter how poor business is, and during the Great Recession, business was poor for a lot of companies, you were looking for those opportunities within those negatives. You found them.
Correct.
You survived where many of your competitors went under.
Correct. And, you know, as, you know, there's a saying, right, making lemonade out of lemons. That's something that, you know, we often think about, that there's volatility, there is change, which oftentimes is scary for leaders and for just us as individuals. We said, no, we are going to take this and make this into an opportunity. And I think that's something that, you know, dealing with that difficulty, that adversity, and still making an opportunity out of that, that's something that we have really done well, I believe.
No matter how bad the economy, there's always opportunities and ways to make money. You mentioned a few moments ago investments.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand you also invest in your people. Tell us about how you invest them and the kind of people that you hire for your culture.
So you mentioned the word culture. That's something that's very important for us. So, you know, as we grew from 12 people in 06 to about 100 people or so in 2010, 2011, until a company is about 100 people, I as the CEO can get to know everybody, you know, get to touch them on a day-to-day basis and do that. But as an organization grows, it's important to institutionalize things more so, right? And my goal was, how do we make sure that as we grow, the things that have made us successful from 06 to 11, we do more of those and we institutionalize that so that as the new set of people come on board, we identify those trends, those tendencies, those ways of working, if I may call it that.
So it's repeatable.
It's repeatable. And, you know, our business is so people intensive, right? I mean, there's a technology aspect to our business.
You're a service business.
We're a service
business.
People. Correct. And so the question that we thought about and met with, you know, some leadership coaches, and they said, it's time for you to think about how do you define the culture, the core values, right? Every organization has a culture. Whether they explicitly recognize it or not, it exists. What we did was we said, okay, let's take a step back and say, who are we as individuals, right? I mean, part of it is we are in business to build a business, to be successful, to obviously have monetary rewards, but it's also who are we as individuals and people who are in this business? What makes us tick? And what are those common things that we think have made us successful? And as we thought about it, we tried to communicate that in our five core values that we talk about.
And those are interesting values because they are not, they're the kind of things that most businesses should do anyway.
Right.
You've brought them to the forefront, and this is what is leading your business. So talk more about those core values and how you develop them.
So it's that core value development process was something that we spent a lot of time on, and it was something that we as the leadership team really stepped back. It wasn't something where we said, let's go get a consultant and have them define what other companies do, and let's just pick something from other companies' website. We really thought about who we are as people, as individuals. As one of my friends said, there are multiple core values that can be good. These just happen to be the one that resonate with us as individuals. Doesn't make these the only good ones or the only right ones. These happen to be the ones that resonate with us. This is who we are. This is the kind of people that we want to bring on board. This is the kind of behavior that we want to encourage with our people. So it was almost 2 days of discussion and debate of, okay, different people were communicating thoughts, and our leadership team got together for a retreat, and we said, what's important? We literally got on the whiteboard and said, I think these things are important. And then somebody else got on the whiteboard and said, this is what I think is important. And so there was a healthy level of debate in what we think are important, what things are important. And then we said, okay, now that we have some sort of a consensus on the broad direction, we said, okay, this is how we will then document them. And then obviously then there's an element of communicating this to our team, our even our clients and such.
Well, these are not high-level core values, but they control a company. Always do the right thing.
Correct.
Always improve by solving problems.
Sure.
Deliver on expectations. Win with humility and be frugal.
Correct.
And again, very not high level, but those are a focus that I'm sure helps you do other things too and has created the culture here.
Correct. And so, so what I do with these core values, every new hire class, I spend an hour talking to them only about the core values.
So this is the foundation of BSI Financial Services.
Correct. As I tell people, we are in the financial services business. We are dealing with other people's money. We have to do the right thing. We don't have a choice, especially coming out of the financial crisis, coming out of the mortgage business, and clearly our industry was the center of a lot of the downturn that happened. I think it's important for us to do the right thing and to be seen to do the right thing. As I talk about, always improve by solving problems. It's about there are a certain number of things that we as senior management can tell our staff as to, hey, here is the process that you follow. But we also encourage and want our people to think about saying, hey, I've gotten to this point. How do I go from A to B? Management theorists call it the problem-solving approach. That, I need people with a problem-solving approach because there's always a new scenario that somebody hasn't thought about. In each of these things, we chose words that were relatively self-explanatory. We wanted our people to have this as a real thing as opposed to having it be perceived as something that a marketing consultant came up with. And I have nothing against marketing consultants. And in fact, we work with one who's great. But the aspect is it needs to be real. It needs to be authentic. One that I'm, personally very passionate about is the win with humility one. Because I think it's important to not only win, but also win with a degree of humility. It's easy to win and then be arrogant about it. But I think it's harder to win and still be humble. And that's something that, is personally very important to me and something that I really talk a lot to our team.
And arrogance can come back and bite you at some point, too, if you're not careful. You're in the financial services industry,
correct,
which is based on the economy. As the economy goes up and down, so could your business. So what's the biggest challenge you face in continuing to grow BSI Financial Services?
You know, our industry, the mortgage industry, has, you know, it's dependent on how the economy is doing, how the rates are doing, how the regulatory environment is changing, you know, how the technology, the landscape in the technology side of our business is changing. So these are four, what I would call macro changes that are happening in our industry. I would say, you know, each one of those is not necessarily more important, but the key is, as a business, we have to look at all four of them and make, as I said, the market changes every 3 to 5 years. Rates go down, refinances spike, rates go up, things look very different. You know, right now, for example, the expectation is rates are going to go up. Well, what does that do to our business? What does that do to our clients' business? And how do we prepare for those scenarios? And that's something that we spend a lot of time on, is saying, what's scenario A, what's scenario B, what's scenario C, and how do we create these plans so that no matter which the scenario is, we can figure out a way to succeed in spite of whatever the change the market is.
So you're doing the what-ifs on either side.
That's correct.
So where do you go from here? Is it organic growth? Is it acquisition growth? Is it both? What are you going to do to continue your growth here at BSI Financial Services?
Sure. I think it's going to be a combination of the two. We have built a certain scale. We have built a certain reputation in the marketplace, and we believe earned the trust of a lot of our clients. And we believe they have additional needs that we can either A, organically build, or B, selectively acquire certain companies and platforms that would be adding value to our clients. We are a very client-centric organization. We think, you know, what does the client want? Let us try to sit in their chair, you know, be in their shoes, and try to think about what they are likely going to want. Some explicitly stated, and then, you know, there is always the Steve Jobs statement that, you know, the customer doesn't know what they want until you give it to them. And that, you know, he was obviously a visionary man, but that's something that for us entrepreneurs to aspire to.
You're a unique organization with a unique clientele, but how do any listeners get a hold of you?
Through our website, you know, they can reach out to me. My email is gagan@bsifinancial.com. Through the phone, a combination of those, you know, social media, I'm on LinkedIn, those kinds of channels, I'm obviously there.
And all that information is also on our website, which is playmakerstalkshow.com. This has been a terrific show, Gagan. Thank you very much for being a part of Playmakers Talk Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Steve.
You are a playmaker. Gagan Sharma is the president and CEO of BSI Financial Services. Thank you very much for listening to us and joining us. Join us again at PlaymakersTalkShow.com, where you can get all of our past episodes. That's PlayMakersTalkShow.com, and we're going to be back with more Playmakers. See you then.
You've been listening to Playmakers Talk Show with Steve Klein. Join Steve again at PlayMakersTalkShow.com for more interviews with interesting and successful playmaking CEOs and executives.
Playmakers.